Afternoon and welcome to episode 77 of the Deck Tease podcast, brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. My name is Erin Campbell. My guest today is the founder of and organizer for Lady Planeswalker Society. She used to work for Wizards of the Coast, and she's recently started a vlog with her husband called Video Time with Mike and Tifa. She is Tifa Robles. Hello.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, welcome back.
Yeah, it is great to be here.
I am so happy to have you back, because the first time you came on the show, we had to kind of keep things just about LPS.
Yeah.
And we didn't really get to talk about you very much. And it didn't even occur to me to have you back on to talk about you. I was talking about potential guests with Adam Staborski. And Adam was like, why don't you have Tifa on your show? And I was like, oh, Adam. I was like, I've totally had her on already. Come on now. And he was like, yeah, but you had her on before. He's like, you can get so much, you know, different stuff out of her now. Like, you should have her back. And I was like, yeah. I was like, you know, I'm lucky enough to be your friend, and I get to see all these different sides of you. And my listeners have not maybe had the pleasure of that. And that's sort of how the idea to have you back on the show came about, was we wanted to know more about you and not just what you've done.
Yeah, and that's awesome. I'm excited for that, because I was really held back before and couldn't talk freely. And now, you know, I no longer have that. So.
I'm also really excited that I can pronounce your last name now. There's been this running gag where I couldn't pronounce Mayan. See, I couldn't pronounce it. Even when you were on the show, I couldn't pronounce it. And then I would say it on subsequent shows and screw it up. And then I actually screwed up Mike's name when he came on the show. And when I found out you two were getting married, I was worried that you were going to do the hyphen thing. And then it would be like, Tifa Mayan Robles. Oh, crap. And I was really glad when you settled on one name, because it was a name that I could repeat and be like, Robles, Robles. I got this. And flawless, Tifa Robles.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for having me back. I'm really glad that we'll be able to talk now about whatever we want.
So let's go ahead and get started. So I want to go all the way back. I want to know about the first time that you discovered magic.
Okay. So I discovered magic when I was working at a board game store. I'd always been super into board games. I played games growing up, like with my family. And then at the very beginning of college, I learned Settlers of Catan, and that just opened up this whole new world of strategy board games. So I picked up a job at a board game store in college. And while working there, I was actually working during the M11 pre-release, and had been at a couple of their Friday Night Magics working and was starting to get to know the people. And I was really excited about the environment and the community, and just the feeling in the store would completely change when there was a magic event happening. And I talked about it all the time and was like, try to sell people on magic, but I myself had never actually played. I didn't even know how to play, but was still sort of captivated by the idea of like that community. And it wasn't very long before my boss sat me down and was like, I'm going to teach you how to play magic, because clearly this is something you're going to be passionate about. And he started me with a Winston draft, which I would not recommend starting someone with.
What is that?
A Winston draft is where each person has three packs.
Okay.
You crack them all open and shuffle them together without like looking. And then there's three piles that start just with one card. You look at the first pile, you decide if you want to take that card or if you want to put it back and take the next card. But whenever you put a card back, you like add a card from the big pile.
Okay.
So like the piles are getting larger throughout, throughout the time. So that like, if there's like some not good common, then like eventually that pile will be big enough that like there will be cards you'll want.
Okay.
So it's a way to draft with two players, that I really like, but again, for learning, it wasn't the best. I didn't really understand what was going on. Hilariously, I thought that it was good to have all of the five colors. And it wasn't until we were like halfway through that I was like, oh, I'm supposed to pick a color. Oh, okay. But I think it actually, like, seeing all of the game in that way was good for someone like me, because I guess I like to be thrown into things. Like, I'll pick up faster if you do that to me.
Sure.
And it was only, like, 3 or 4 weeks before I started playing in tournaments myself.
Wow.
And, like, I didn't do well. Like, I don't think anyone who's brand new does. But I started playing at FNM every week. And it was only like a couple months in when I went to a GP, because a whole bunch of us just went down to Portland for one to try it out. And I went like 3 and 4, and I played so many rounds just because I wanted the practice. Mm-hmm. And then I started playing in PTQs, but like never did like good at all. But it was such good exposure and experience. And it's also where I learned a lot of the flaws in the community that, you know, I try to combat with Lady Planeswalkers.
Were you intimidated at all being a new player in those venues? Because I remember my first PTQ, and I remember feeling like I wasn't properly eased into it. And I've heard people say that that's really where we tend to lose people is, you know, they get very into it at FNM, and then there's really no in between FNM and like a PTQ or a GP. Did you feel that at all?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was terrifying. Mm-hmm. And then add on top of that, the like judgment that I was feeling because I was a girl, mm-hmm. And like the comments that I would overhear and stuff like that. Like it was really hard and very intimidating. But at the same time, that sort of pushed me to keep going. Like, I really just wanted to prove myself.
Yeah.
There was some part of me that was like, I'm never going to give up on this game until I'm good, because I have to prove to people that women can be good at Magic.
Did you ever feel the negative side of that, where you feel like I know when I first came back to the game, I felt like I not only had to represent women, but I had to represent trans women. And then if I didn't, I would really sort of beat myself up over it, where, oh, great, now everybody's going to think girls can't play because you fucked it up, Erin. Good job. I mean, did you ever feel that?
I still feel that.
Yeah.
Anytime, like, I hate to admit this, but anytime I lose Magic, I feel that.
Yeah.
Like, even, you know, even at part, well, I guess, like, personal parties with friends over, I don't feel it as much. Mm-hmm. But I still, there's just some sense of that anytime I play Magic, where when I win, I don't feel like I'm just winning for me. I feel like I'm winning for women. And when I lose, it's like, I don't want to let women down. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy that like that feeling is still with me when I feel like I have proven myself at this point, but it's still just a personal goal of mine that like I want everyone in my life to know that like women can be just as good as men.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely feel that way. And I also feel that way when I see men be proud of other men. Like, I feel like a man can win a lot of the time, and there's no questioning why he won. They don't care who he had to draw into or draw with to get into the top eight, or they don't really care what deck he played. But I feel like a lot of times when a woman does well, that you can't just do well. It's, you know, oh, well, who did you, you know, draw with, or what did you play, or what did you say, or what did you do? And it's like, why can't you, you know, I feel like a lot of times you have to justify how good you are.
Yeah.
And that's very troubling. And even now, I feel like, you know, I've managed to earn the respect of a lot of players locally, but in the beginning I would win at FNM, and I was playing Black Infect at the time, and people were like, oh, look at that Black Infect deck. But I know if a guy played Infect, it would be, Infect is so cool. And I saw that double standard very early on, where it was, you know, I couldn't just win. It was, oh, she won with a cheap deck. And it's like, he didn't, you know, why doesn't he get that, you know?
Yeah, that totally. So that actually, I can remember a very specific instance that this happened to me on the Magic Cruise. I was paired against a pro player. I'm not going to name names, mm-hmm. but I was paired against a pro player, and I beat him 0-2, like wasn't close. Mm-hmm. And then he was like complaining to everyone that like, oh, my sealed pool was just too good. And it's like, what the fuck, man? Like, you can't say, oh, I wasn't expecting her to be good. And she was like, no, you just had to blame it on like the couple of cards that came out that like wiped your board or whatever. It's like, I got no credit. I just happened to be lucky with my sealed pool. I mean, that was very frustrating because I actually at that point was already working at Wizards. LPS was doing pretty good. And it was frustrating that like I still had that attitude towards me.
It's also scary when I notice myself doing that. I remember to other women. I was at SCG Milwaukee last year in October, and I played this girl, and she was sort of the if I dare I say it, the stereotypical pretty girl. She had long, flowing blonde hair and big blue eyes, and her makeup was flawless. And you could tell that she was sort of new to the game. So she liked her Celestia deck. She thought a lot of the creatures were cute. And I'll admit there was a little part of me that was like, I am going to destroy you. You know, and I didn't think she was a threat. I took her for granted. And she ended up being better than I thought. And I was sort of, when it was over and done with, I was very mad at myself, because even I had those negative thoughts of, oh, look at the little Barbie doll and her pretty little deck. And I'm like, Erin, don't do that. Like, you know, you're not helping. And sometimes I fall into that trap too. Or maybe I'll see a girl who is the opposite. Maybe she came in her sweats and maybe she didn't do anything with her hair. And I'm just like, who's the smelly girl that I have to play? And I find myself, because we're so surrounded by it, sometimes we even pick up on that and kind of embarrassed to say it.
So I love that you brought that up. Mm-hmm. Because to be honest, before Lady Planeswalker Society, I didn't really like other women. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I was like, oh, I hate them, right? I mean, I'm a feminist, so it's not like I'm misogynistic or anything. Mm-hmm. But I was just very uncomfortable. I had a lot of fear surrounding like friendships with women, because throughout like middle school and high school, I just got backstabbed so many times that it was really, really hard for me when like I left high school to like feel comfortable approaching women and having conversations with them. And to be honest, I've always struggled with other people being jealous of me. And I'm not saying that 'cause like, oh, I'm so awesome, people are jealous, but it's like, it's just a true thing.
Sure.
But like, that's always been something that's happened to me. And I've had friends who have admitted that like, yeah, when I first met you, I was kind of jealous and like, didn't know how to act around you.
Me.
But once I started Lady Planeswalker Society and was so like caught up in the vision of what I wanted and what it meant, it was almost like that melted away very quickly, because I was like, I need to be comfortable going up to a woman and talking to her about magic, or talking to her about my group and making sure she's comfortable in this environment that I've built. And I really had to face those fears and get rid of, you know, those judgments that you were talking about. 'Cause I used to, if I would see a blonde, and like, I'll admit, like, I'm blondest. If I would see a blonde, I would assume things about her that like, I don't know anything. Like, that was so unfair of me to assume that like, oh, she's probably a sorority girl, or oh, she probably thinks she's so much better than me, or like all these horrible negative thoughts that I've tried to completely like throw away.
Yeah.
Because with LPS, I've just gotten to know so many different women and so many different types of women that they've really proven to me that like, I don't know anything until, you know, I sit down and have a conversation with them. And I hate to admit that like, I used to be that person. But I'm so happy to see like where I am now, and the fact that wherever I am, I'm completely comfortable to go up to someone I don't know, regardless of gender, and have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm normally really competitive when it comes to gaming. And when I played World of Warcraft, it was like, you know, I would never differentiate between a woman and a man. And I would, you know, take a girl down if it meant that it was, you know, if we were competing for a raid spot or whatever. But I have to agree with you that when I started playing Magic, I felt almost this instant solidarity with other women, where I would go to like a 200, 300 person event and immediately single out like the only other girl, and I would want to befriend her, and I would want to like latch onto her. And it would just be this feeling of, all right, you and I are the only two here. We might as well get together and take all these guys down, you know. And I did feel this, that I did have this feeling of it's us against them, and mm-hmm. and we shouldn't be fighting. And we, you know, it's just, there's too few of us to do that. And with WoW, I didn't feel that at all, because, and you know, maybe the equality was misleading, but it's like, you know, there were female guild leaders in WoW, and there were female raid leaders. And that's not to say that women didn't have it bad, but women were okay. When I saw how much work needed to be done on the magic front, I really wanted to band together with other women and take all that down.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me. And I think we might have talked about this a little the last time I was on here. But it's really interesting to me that, like, in World of Warcraft, you have that anonymousness. Mm-hmm. But in magic, like, you're face-to-face.
Yeah.
So you'd think that it would be worse online. Mm-hmm. But in my experiences, I also played WoW for 6 months, and I game all the time, like on Xbox.
Yeah.
And I've dealt with way more sexism in the Magic community than I've seen or had online.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just weird. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back to how you guys started with Magic. One of the things that I mentioned when I had Heather on my show recently was that I was really lucky to grow up with women playing Magic, and I was always surrounded by female Magic players. Was that the case with you too?
No. Mm-hmm. So I knew of some other girls that played at my FNM. And like we would talk a little, but I wouldn't say there was like a strong bond there. Mm-hmm. And I knew like a lot of the guys' girlfriends and wives who like dabbled in Magic. But I think my own insecurities were just holding me back from really going after those bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Until LPS started, and then that like changed everything. And now like most of my best friends I know because of Magic.
Mm-hmm. So you would say that you always kind of had the feeling that women were sort of the minority and that it was like that.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There was, we had our pre-releases would get like 90 people and our FNMs usually had about 40. And like at all of those events, I can only think of 4 or 5 other women that were ever there.
Mm-hmm. See, it was so different for me because the first person who taught me how to play Magic was a girl. And my best friend in high school was a girl, and we played Magic all the time together, and she was a lesbian, and her girlfriend played, and then there were days where her girlfriend's sister would come over, and there would be 4 or 5 of us, you know, in sophomore year of high school, sitting around a poker table, listening to Eve 6 and playing Magic Gathering for hours on end. You know, I never knew that it was like that until I sort of left my bubble, and then I would go to the larger game store in Milwaukee and be like, oh, and there would be 5 of us, which I would think would be a lot. We'd get into a minivan and go, and then there'd be 40 guys, and
yeah.
We would be like, we're the only girls, and we came together, and no yeah. other girls came. Like, that was sort of the reality check that, you know, it is really different. And even the local game stores here are so awesome, and I've never really had a problem, and there are girls who play, but then I see the ladies of MTG Facebook, and I see how bad some other people have it, and it was very sobering for me. It was like, whoa, it's really like that? Like, ooh, and I had no idea.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's unfortunate or fortunate, but I was on the other side of the spectrum where there weren't, like, there was a lot of nights where I was the only girl in the store.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you would have been as inclined to start a group like LPS if you'd had an experience like mine? Or do you think the fact that you did go through some of the things you went through and you did see how low the numbers were motivated you to start that?
I definitely think it's the latter.
Yeah.
That I felt the problem so close and personal to myself that I wanted to do something to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, fix also is not really the right word, but it's, you know, help.
Yeah.
So I think that really motivated me. Not to say that I never would have thought about it or started it, but I think it would have taken more motivation from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I would have been as passionate about it.
So you're working at the game store and you learn how to play Magic and you mm-hmm. dip your toe in the competitive scene. And then eventually you actually get hired by Wizards of the Coast. How did that happen?
Yeah. So I was nearing the end of college. It was like spring before graduating and I didn't really know what the hell I wanted to do. but as into Magic as I was like, hey, maybe I can work for Wizards of the Coast. And I was like, man, how do you get a job there? And that was part of the reason that I was going after the competitive scene was like, well, if I become, you know, like a good, well-known player, they'll want me to work there. but I knew some people that worked there. And when I was job searching, I asked some of my friends if they thought there was something I would qualify for. And Lee Sharp actually recommended me for a position in customer service.
Mm-hmm.
And within 2 weeks of that happening, I was hired there. And that's, yeah, it was really awesome. I, to this day, like, thank Lee for that because, you know, it really changed my life.
Mm-hmm. Another way that working for Wizards changed your life is you met your husband there, Mike.
I did.
Tell me about the day you met him.
So, we met the day that I interviewed for Wizards.
Okay.
But there was mutual attraction for sure,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't like in the movies when you like see someone across the room. And the reason for that had nothing to do with like us or our compatibility, but had everything to do with the fact that he was actually married to somebody else at the time.
Oh my.
And I was in a very committed relationship as well.
Scandalous.
So he was going through a rough time in his marriage and was trying to focus on that. But at the same time, you know, it was like, whoa, who's this new like hot thing in the office? And I guess like when I set up my desk there, so there was a picture of my niece who was like a baby at the time. Mm-hmm. On my desk, and he apparently like was asking around the office if that was my baby because he just wanted to know more about me. So like I feel like we were always sort of drawn to each other but tried to ignore it because we were in other relationships. Like, you're not supposed to think about other people, but we would like find each other thinking about each other. And like I know that like I would always completely stop paying attention to what I was doing at work. Like, whenever he was anywhere near my desk, he was really good friends with somebody who sat next to me. And he'd come over and chat with him like multiple times a day. And whenever he did that, like, I would pretend I was still working, but would like listen to every single word he said. And like, you know, like glance over at him. So really like, and he told me that the reason he was over there so much was like basically to do the same. Mm-hmm. So we had like these like innocent crushes on each other the entire time that I worked there. And it wasn't until his marriage ended in separation and he was going through the process of the divorce while I was trying to find a way out of mine. And we started chatting more and like flirting a little bit more at work where, you know, he'd come like give me a fist bump every day. And then there was this moment that both of us feel very strongly about where we danced together at PAX. We both have a long history of swing dancing from before we knew each other. Mm-hmm. And we realized this at PAX. And we danced like a few times that night. And I think that's really when we like started to fall in love, was like when we realized we had even more in common. And at this point, like his marriage was over. And like, I wasn't in a good place in my relationship. But like, it started this friendship that, you know, ended now where we are. But like, that was sort of the start of this, like, wow, there could really be something here. And he started coming to my karaoke bar occasionally. We started inviting each other to things. And after a few months of that, we were at his karaoke bar for a big party, and it was a few drinks into the night that Mike hit on me right after I sang the Evanescence song Bring Me to Life.
Okay.
He like grabbed my hands and like pulled me in, like our foreheads were touching, and he's like, that was the most amazing thing ever. And like my boyfriend is like a few yards away and my response is to go, like, I immediately went to my boyfriend and asked him to leave. Mike was pretty wasted at this point, so he actually left not much later, leaving me with like this long lingering hug. But you know, that week my boyfriend and I broke up. Mike and I started hanging out basically every day from that point. And it was not very long before, like, it was obvious we were meant to be together and that's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm. Were there any concerns about you two having an office romance? Like, was that something that you ever thought about, or maybe you felt like people wouldn't be supportive of?
So one thing about Wizards is there are a lot of couples. There's a lot of married couples that
really?
Met working there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who like started there and then bring their spouse in, and get like their spouse hired on. So they're actually very open to having office relationships. And on top of that, like, you have to still be professional.
Sure.
And we were very good at remaining professional at work. It was a while before we like opened that up to the office, and like admitted that, you know, hey, by the way, we're seeing each other. Mm-hmm. But when we did, there was no concern. There wasn't, you know, any behavior that like got us in trouble or anything. Mm-hmm. I actually think the transition of not working together was much harder than working together at Wizards.
Yeah. Were there ever any concerns about, like, you know, especially being a fledgling relationship, like, well, what if this doesn't work out and then I have to see him at the copy machine and, oh, it's going to be awkward? Like, was that ever something that crossed your mind?
So as silly as it is, no, because I just knew, I knew he was the one that early on, like right away. Yeah. And he felt the same way. It was a week, it was a weekend before we discussed like how we felt about each other, and I didn't think there was anything that would cause us to break up.
Wow. And maybe that's just my luck with relationships, because I've had that happen so many times where I've gone into it thinking, oh, this person is really great, and not that I can see myself marrying them, but I can see them lasting for a couple years, and then something always goes horribly awry, and then I just see them everywhere and I always sort of kick myself. And maybe that's just me having my own, but that would be the first thing that I would think of is, oh god, what if he has a weird chest hair pattern, or he snores and I have to break up with him, and then he wants to sit at our table and I have to look at him and, oh god, just go away.
Yeah, so in every other relationship I had felt that way.
Yeah.
And you know, I still have, like, I have an ex in the magic scene and an ex in the swing dance scene, and you know, it's never comfortable. But I was just, we were really lucky that, you know, we never had to worry about that.
When I had Mike on my show, I asked him what it was like to be part of an internet famous couple, because you two are synonymous with each other, Mike and Tifa. You each have your own fans and your own following and people who enjoy you two together. How do you two decide what to put out there for your followers and what to keep to yourselves?
Well, we're both very public people. Mm-hmm. We're transparent. We're, you know, outgoing. I've never been one that really keeps secrets. Mm-hmm. And Mike, like, we're so happy to, like, share our lives with the world. Mm-hmm. Mike posts about everything happening in his life. So really that hasn't been an issue. Like, there have been times where we've talked about, like, oh, should we tell everyone this? And, like, you know, we sometimes plan, like, the bigger decisions, like when we were announcing that we were getting married, and that sort of stuff. Like, we talk about it, but there hasn't been a lot of obstacles about it. I know when we first started dating, I was uncomfortable with the fact that he hadn't been that open about his divorce. Mm-hmm. That was something that was, like, very personal to him and was hard for him to talk about, at least publicly. So that was, like, a weird obstacle in the very early parts of our relationship. But he then made a post about it on his blog and, you know, including that, like, he'd met somebody that made him believe in marriage again. Mm-hmm. And that really got rid of that. And I think helped him open up even more of his life to the world. Mm-hmm. Instead of just making, you know, posts about, like, funny cat videos or whatever. Like, he actually started posting more about, like, our life and our love. And we both, we actually were talking about this before you had me on right now, how we both have decided to, like, try to only post about positive things in general. Mm-hmm. Apparently he used to post, like, more negative things when he was in, like, a worse place in his life. And eventually he, like, looked back through his log and was like, why am I doing that? Like, why am I focusing on the negative? And we'd much rather make people see our posts and be happy for us than, like, you know, something like, oh, traffic is shitty. Mm-hmm. Like, what is someone going to say? Like, why does anyone care? Mm-hmm. And, like, I do want to point out my exception to the positive is I will post feminist articles because that's, you know, something that's important. But that's, you know, not about, like, personal life.
Mm-hmm. I've thought about doing that too. The only thing that sort of stops me is I use my social media as a way to not say it to the people I want to say it to, because I have struggled with tilt and I've gotten very good about it these last couple months and I'd like to stay that way. And in my mind, my reasoning for it is I can tell my opponent to eat me and say terrible things and tilt like crazy, or I can simply take it to Twitter and be like, I really didn't want to face this guy. I really don't like his deck, and not say that to the person. And in my mind, I feel like that's the better of the two. And I feel like if I were to not have a place for those negative things, what would I do with those thoughts? How would I get rid of them? Where would, you know, would I just stew in them? That doesn't feel very good either. So maybe if I could find another place to leave those thoughts, I wouldn't tweet about it. But I don't have anywhere else to go with it. So I don't know how I would manage that, but I'd like to do that too.
Yeah, well, and I don't think there's anything wrong, you know, with doing that. It's just something, like, we have decided. that we don't want to do.
Yeah. I can relate to that. Do you guys ever feel any pressure to keep up the image of the happy couple? Because you guys are disgustingly cute, and I love you both, and I've seen how happy you are. And that's not to say that you're not, but, you know, there are times where people want to only see that. You know, they don't want to see the bad. They don't want to, or maybe they do. And like you said earlier in the show, there are haters, and if you're too pretty or you're too happy, people want to take you down. So is there ever any pressure of that?
I don't think that we've, like, really felt any pressure. Mm-hmm. It's like, of course we fight like any couple.
Yeah.
But we're not going to post about that. We're not going to include that in, you know, our YouTube videos or whatever. But like, really, the happy couple thing, that's real. Like, that's very real. That's how we feel. And like, I've actually felt more pressure the other way of like, are we going overboard? Mm-hmm. Like, are we flooding people too much with how happy we are? Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's honestly just our lives. Like, we're pretty happy people.
Mm-hmm. Although I did watch the bloopers videos.
Yeah.
Diva Mayan did come out there, just throwing that out there. And it's funny because I saw the post and Mike had tried saying that he was the diva. And he's like, oh, I was getting my water and I was dabbing my face. And I was watching you and I could see your, you know, tucking your lip a little bit. And I was like, oh, she's not having this. Diva Mayan is not playing. And it was very cute to watch you get a little flustered with him. And I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah. My friends who know me know that, like, I have a temper,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I definitely try to hide that from, you know, the public. But if you're ever at an event with me or at my, especially at my house, like, you'll see that, like, the little temper, the little bit of annoyances that get me.
Well, I think it's very cute. I've seen it happen and it's like, oh, that's adorable. And
yeah. Well, and that's actually why we wanted to put the bloopers up, mm-hmm. is that we want people to see, like, that part of us too, right? That we're not, like, it's not scripted, it's not, you know, us putting on this persona, but like, including the bloopers is like, it makes us real.
Mm-hmm. I had also made a comment when I had Mike on the show. I asked him how he felt about being seen as Mr. Tifa Mayan. And he had made an interesting comment that you tend to feel like he's more famous than you, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that still true? Because you're a big deal.
I don't think it's as true anymore. Okay. He has like double the followers that I do, which, you know, that's like a minor thing that adds to that feeling. Mm-hmm. But actually, since leaving Wizards, I feel like we're probably equally as famous just because we post about each other so much. Mm-hmm. That if somebody knows who Mike is, they know who I am.
Yeah.
So really that makes me feel more like we're probably equal, and especially coming out with the video, and we're going to start doing conventions together and stuff like that. Like, we're going to be viewed as a joint thing, kind of like what you said, you know, when you brought up Mike, like, we're really a joint, like, person almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we do have our own interests and our separate things that we do, but we're so connected that if one of us follows either of us, they're going to be seeing the other person.
Mm-hmm. It was just so interesting that he would say that. And, you know, because it would be interesting that he would say, well, Tifa doesn't see herself that way, or she doesn't think she's that big of a deal. And I was like, how can you not? Like, you know, like, you are Tifa, now Tifa Robles, you know, you're a big deal.
Yeah. There's been a lot of things that have happened since then that have made me realize that.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some pretty big opportunities that unfortunately I had to turn down because I was at Wizards. Mm-hmm. But big opportunities that, you know, were large enough that made me want to leave my job, because that really made me realize that I've grown into a bigger thing than, you know, a person that works at Wizards. And really, like, I want to get LPS more exposure than I was able to do there.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that, like, Geek and Sundry and National Geographic and these big names had interest in Lady Planeswalker Society was enough for me to realize I am a big enough deal, mm-hmm. to, like, go out there and do this.
You're Tifa Robles.
I am Tifa Robles.
Sometimes you just have to look in the mirror and be like, I am Tifa Robles. Yes. Yes. So let's talk about that. So in December, you decided to quit your job at Wizards,
I
and you
did.
told me a little bit about what led up to that. Give me some more insight into that. Like, what made you decide to pull the plug?
So the way that I really like to explain this, like the easiest way to explain this to people, is to view it like scales, where when I first started at Wizards, the scale was tipped in the favor of working there very strongly. It was clearly the best career move for me to be a brand manager. LPS was pretty small at the time. I wasn't really known or anything like that. Like, I didn't have a lot of opportunities. So working at Wizards was like huge, and I was super, super happy there. I loved the people. I loved my manager. It was just this great place. Perfect, like, start for just out of college career. And I was willing to put all of my other things, like my novel writing, which you can't really do while working at Wizards, and all these other things that, like, I had interest in acting and interest in conventions, but like none of that was big enough for me to not take this career. So I was like, all right, I'll put all these things on the back burner for now and just really focus on being a brand manager for Magic. Over the course of time, I was at Wizards for 3 years. I was a brand manager for two. And over the course of those 2 years that I was a brand manager, the scales slowly tipped in the other direction over time. As Lady Planeswalkers got bigger and bigger and got more exposure, and more people were asking me to be on interviews and like to be on their vlogs and all these other things, that was becoming harder and harder to not only turn down, because sometimes I was allowed to do things, but like the larger they got, the less likely they were going to let me do them. So like when really big names were coming to me and I would ask for permission, they were like, no, no. And they got to the point where they were like, LPS has gotten too much, like too big for you to be both that and a brand manager. And they actually gave me the ultimatum of like, what are you going to focus on? Because right now you're two personas, and they felt that those two personas were clashing. And it took me a couple months of like thinking about that for me to make the decision. But with all of that happening, I was less happy at work. To be honest, I wasn't really feeling appreciated. And then on the other hand, there were all these opportunities that they like I had to turn down, and I ended up missing out on some of them, unfortunately. And like hope I'm hoping that in the future they'll come back. And like I knew that I had other job prospects. Even just like mentioning the idea of finding another job, I had tons of friends that were like, "Oh, you would totally fit in here." So I knew that like that wouldn't be a problem. But more importantly than that, all those personal goals that I'd pushed back in the back burner were like coming up. I got like very, very frustrated that I hadn't written in so long, that I used to draw even, and like I never intended to like be an artist, but just the fact that like I never did any of that like creative stuff that I used to do, and I wasn't even allowed to while working there. It got very frustrating, and I was having all these like personal conflicts within myself of like, what is important to me? Why am I letting this corporation like kill that person? Like, I felt like I'd lost a big part of myself. So, obviously the scales had flipped. I didn't think my career was really moving at the pace that I wanted it to, and it was obvious that it wasn't going to be anytime soon. So I decided to quit. And like it was not an easy decision. Magic means so much to me, and I was so scared that like once I left Wizards that half of the people that followed me would suddenly think that I didn't matter anymore. Like that was a huge fear of mine. And I actually know of a few people that that did happen with. Every time I had like I've had friends for people I thought were friends from Wizards like unfollow me and defriend me, and that was really painful. And like other people in the Magic community that I have a lot of respect for that stopped following me. And it was, I expected it. Luckily, it didn't hit me as hard as I thought it might. Like I thought it might be a much larger percent, but I had a lot of people in the Magic community that were excited for me. tons of people that were like, congratulations, I'm proud of you. Like overwhelmingly so. And I did not expect that at all. And that was really wonderful and encouraging. And it felt very empowering to make that decision and, you know, proudly tell the public instead of it being like, wow, you made a huge mistake, which is kind of what I expected. But it was a wonderful decision. Like, I'm so much happier now. Just each day, I just feel this freedom. I explained the feeling before. I love this analogy, where if you're somebody who needs glasses, before you have glasses, you think you can see. Like, you think you know what the world looks like. And, you know, you're like, oh, I don't really need glasses. And then you go and you get glasses. You're like, fine, I'll wear these stupid things. And then you can suddenly, like, see, like, detail. And it's like everything is slightly different. That's how it felt. Like, I felt like I went from, like, having these shackles that I didn't realize were that heavy. But then as soon as I left, this, like, overwhelming freedom of, like, I can do whatever I want. I could say whatever I want. And I don't have to be afraid. And it was just really wonderful that, you know, on top of that, I had all this support from these people that I have respect for.
It's interesting that you would say that you were being denied these opportunities, because I would think that you would be the perfect person to represent a company. Like, I can't, you know, you're passionate and you're intelligent and, you know, you're cute, which doesn't hurt. Just putting that out there. And, you know, I would think that anybody would want you to represent them. Like, I know if somebody were to say to me, Aaron, we need you to represent your show, I'd probably send you, because I would be a terrible spokeswoman. and you would be so much better at it than I would be, between how approachable you are and everything else. I can't imagine denying you that opportunity. Like, you would be a shoo-in, I would think. So it was very interesting that you would say that, because it's like, who better than you? Like, who else who got the job, you know? And that's just crazy to me.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I had many conversations with, like, the higher ups at Wizards of, like, why, why I couldn't do these things. And it never really made sense to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just, like, me being biased about it or what, but I don't really have an answer that, you know, I can be like, oh, it was this, right? Like they would say that Lady Planeswalkers was a conflict of interest, and that didn't make any sense to me. I was like, we have the same goals.
Yeah.
So I didn't get it.
So the one thing I'm really curious about is, magic is such a big part of your life. And I remember even when I went to visit you, you had a stack of play mats about as big as an ottoman, and you had magic art, and you had boxes upon boxes. And even when you and Michael weren't at work, you were still drafting and cubing and things like that. Is magic still a big part of your life now that you're not with Wizards anymore?
Absolutely. Okay. We actually have two Lady Planeswalker societies now. The one in Seattle that's every week and has been for 3 years. And we just started a, like, east side of Seattle LPS that's 2 times a month. So now we're doing six a month, which is a huge commitment. And, like, magic, you know, we still Winston draft together. We still, you know, play magic together. We're actually having a bunch of people over today to play with pre-release packs. It's still, you know, just a it's still a big part of our lives, just in a different way. Because before, you know, it was what we were doing at work. Like, we had to play at work and, you know, stuff like that. But now, like, we're able to focus on other gaming, which is really cool. And soon we'll actually be able to play at FNMs and pre-releases and GPs together. And that's really, really exciting, because it's something we haven't been able to experience together. And I think I'll enjoy that more than I did, you know, the stuff we could do at Wizards. Like, now we'll actually be able to go play with the community whenever we want. And yeah, that's awesome.
And you'll also be excited about sets again.
Yeah. It's weird, because right now I'm taking a back seat, like, more than I used to. Like, I used to have to, like, read all the articles and everything and keep up. Because I was working there and I needed to know what was going on. Since I left, I was like, I kind of don't want to read about that for a while. Like, I want to take a step back and, like, have some breathing space before I see all that again. And I think it's going to be, like, when I'm able to play again, I think I'll get back into that and, like, reading about deck tech and all that. But right now I'm like, you know, I still want to play, but I don't really want to be a part of all that right now. Mm-hmm. I'm just not ready.
Well, it's totally reasonable. So tell me about the vlog. Tell me about video time with Mike and Tifa. How'd that get started?
So this was a dream of mine and Mike's forever. Like I don't remember when it was, but I remember us having this long conversation about, like, if we could have anything in our lives, like, what would our lives be? Like, if we didn't have to worry about money or anything like that, like, what would we do? Mm-hmm. And it was really just to be, like, have a YouTube channel with all sorts of stuff, like skits and game reviews and just about us and having fun. And then, like, going to conventions and all, like, we just kind of wanted to be gamer famous and, you know, have fun with that. So when we realized that, like, I'd be leaving Wizards, it just opened up this thing that we thought could never happen. Because at the time, when we had that conversation, we were both working at Wizards. And we were like, well, we'll never get to do this stuff. But then, like, with that freedom that I was having, a big part of that was those dreams we had can now come true. So we started the YouTube channel, which has really been, like, our primary focus of, like, how to get off the ground. And we've also been in deep talks with Emerald City Comic Con. So we're expecting to do some things for that. And we submitted some stuff for PAX East. And, you know, there's tons of conventions this year that we're planning on going to and hoping to have some panels and stuff like that. So it's really like watching our dreams come true slowly.
What's it like working with him?
It's fun. It's really fun. Like, we work really well together.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, we tend to agree on most things. And when we don't, like, we're really good at, like, having a conversation about that. And, like, I'd be lying if I said we haven't argued over the YouTube channel at all, because we totally have. But at the same time, like, it's this whole different part of our relationship that we weren't able to experience before. Mm-hmm. And I actually feel like it's brought us closer. Like, you were talking about the diva thing. So he was totally being a diva. And I'm not saying I wasn't, but I had never seen him diva out like that before. And that was just this awesome side where I was like, whoa, my husband's a diva. And it was like, wow, that's really neat. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So what's the story with our panel?
So that is, I'm still waiting for it to be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, you know, we won't know if it's actually happening until I hear back from PAX.
Mm-hmm.
When I talked to you, it was submission time. So I don't know how long they take from when they get submissions to when they, like, actually respond to you. But it would be me, you, my friend Charisse, who's pretty active in LPS, and then some other feminist stuff like burlesque and other things like that, that, you know, she's very passionate about feminism in a totally different way than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's good. Jackie Lee has said that she would join us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, I think it would be the four of us. There were some other people I reached out to, but they haven't confirmed yet. So right now, those are the confirmed people. And I know that I want it to be about being a gamer and a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I haven't put too much thought or attention to, like, what that means, because I want to get together with the other panelists and discuss, like, what each person wants to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll figure out a way to have that flow. And I want to decide together, like, what exactly we're going to talk about.
Well, I hope it gets approved, because I actually have given it a lot of thought. I already know what outfit I'm going to wear. I've already practiced my wave for when they let us onto the panel. I know exactly how I'm going to wave to people. I already know what jokes I'm going to make. I've given this way too much thought. You know, I already
know.
That's
amazing.
I have, like, my necklace bracelet scrunchie combo. I am in this to win it.
Well, that's great. Cause then you can, once we all get together on Skype or however we're going to talk about it, you can help with driving the conversation.
Because
I could sit here and plan it out, but I'd feel bad if, like, I completely drive it and I'm, like, completely missing something that, like, you guys want to talk about. Like, I don't want to get too hung up in, like, my own personal issues and that be, like, the whole hour. Because that's what would happen if I sat down and started planning. Like, I would be like, oh, that's 50 minutes. Sorry, guys. So I'm just going to, like, wait until it's accepted and then, you know, meet with everybody.
I was just so flattered that you would even think of me. I was just like, oh, my God, Tifa asked me to be on a panel. Like, oh, my God. Like, it was such an honor and such a humbling feeling. And, yeah, I think you even saw, like, I was spamming you with messages of, I can't do this. I have something to do that weekend, but I'll change it for you. Oh, but I can't afford it. I will find money. And I was constantly going back and forth. And I'm sure you were just like, bitch, crazy. Like, what's going on? And it was a very big deal to even have you think of me.
Yeah, I you were like one of the first people I thought of as like who would be perfect for this panel. And I mean you want like a variety of backgrounds, mm-hmm. right? So like I said, my friend Charisse like views feminism in a different way than I do. And like you're trans, so like that has a whole different perspective. And obviously that's not the only reason I want you. Like you're so lovable that like you will draw people to the panel, and you will make people laugh in a way that I can't. But like, you know, having those different perspectives is going to be really, really good. Mm-hmm.
Before we close out the show, there's one thing I want to talk about with regards to women and something I've been running up against lately and I don't know what to say about. What would you say to women who have maybe had a negative experience at their local game store or at an event and they're hesitant to get back into the scene again? I know a big thing we're really excited about is GP Portland. Yes. Heather has dubbed it GP Vagina. Yeah. And we're trying to get as many women as we can to come to the GP just to have an awesome experience. And I had one of my Twitter followers say something to me, to paraphrase, she was like, you know, competitive events are nothing but, you know, places of bigotry and misogyny and homophobia. And she just was so set in that mindset that nothing I could say could change her mind. And I didn't know what to say. I was like, what do I say to this? How do I change your mind? Like, what would you say if you were in that position?
I mean, it's an awkward position to be in, right? Because like, I understand maybe the environment isn't worth the time and energy to stick with magic for some people. But the only way that that problem is ever going to be solved is if we confront it, right? Like you can accept the problem and leave, or you can like see the problem and try to combat it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that like every woman needs to combat this problem. It's totally fine. Like you can not play, but like you're missing out on this awesome game and this awesome community. And then I think what I would do is recommend that like they find other women to play with and like maybe play at home. Like, you know, do you know people that you could just invite over and play magic with? Like start there. You don't have to play in the store to play magic.
Creating your own safe space.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then like further ways to confront it or like spread awareness on social media. Like if you had a really shitty time at F&M, like bring it up on social media, see what people say, like just get that conversation started. Cause like, that's really the only way anything's going to change. And yeah, it's really easy to just like give up and walk away. But those problems are still happening to people. Mm-hmm. And personally for me, like I want to do whatever I can to make magic something that everyone can play and not feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Or to take a cue from Mike, you know, talking about positive experiences. You know, if you've gone to a game store that was excellent to women and you had a wonderful time and the bathroom was clean and the staff was helpful, I'd plug that store and be like, this is a good store for you. Go to this store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and one great thing about magic that I think I sometimes get, like, don't think of as much, because I'm such an in-store player and always have been and always will be. But you can make magic like what you want it to be in your life. Like you can have magic away from sexism, away from the bigotry, and, you know, create not just your own like place, but just your own relationship with the game. Mm-hmm.
And just even creating your own support system. It's like, you know, one of the things I really like about, you know, my fellow magic players who happen to be women is we want to find other women. We like that. I talked about that solidarity from before. Heather, she likes to make a comment that she collects binders of women. You know, the minute she sees a female player, she's following her. She's retweeting her. She's getting involved. We invite them to the Ladies of MTG Facebook group. We forward them to you if they're in the area, or if they're in an area that can support an LPS. We want to change things. And even judges. It's like, like, you know, when that woman had made the comment to me on Twitter and I didn't know what to say, I had judges like Ricky and Nate that were like, we're here. Like, if she sees that, we're going to handle that. And there are judges who want to make a difference and there are players who want to make a difference, but you have to be there for them to make that difference. You know, you have to give them the chance to intervene, to act on your behalf. And if you're not going, they can't do that.
So I know a number of judges that are like that. And I also know a number of stores that are like that.
Yeah.
Like store owners that are like, you know, they can't hear everything said, but like if something is said, like they will kick people out. Like they will do something to make a difference. The new store that I started LPS in, the more recent one, the first couple events, there were some issues with some guys like that were hanging around saying some things that, you know, pissed me off. Like, because at this point it's like, hey, we're starting this because it's been so successful somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, why are you treating me like we're nothing? Mm-hmm. I'm worse than nothing. Like, you know, we get, I know one guy like giggled at the idea, like, oh, that's adorable. And like that, I get that all the time. The like, oh, how cute. That's something that like has came up so many times. And every time it's like, it's actually more frustrating than any other response for me, because it's like, it's just so demeaning, not to our magic skills, but just to us as people.
Yeah.
Like, oh, women can't get together in game. Like, that's just cute. Like, oh man, sorry to go on a tangent, but like that really frustrates me.
I've been there.
Yeah. So, you know, I've definitely dealt with that a lot.
Yeah, I think what you said is true about going to the store. I was at the Born of the Gods pre-release a weekend or two ago, and this guy showed up to the pre-release wearing a t-shirt, and it said, "The only job I need is a blowjob."
Wow.
And it wasn't, I think the thing that bothered me more than anything, it didn't really upset me as a woman. It upset me more for the fact that we have a lot of families who come, and we have a lot of fathers who will come with their sons or their daughters or their, you know, mothers and sons, and they will play magic together, specifically at the pre-releases and the Two-Headed Giants. And, you know, if it was like a Midnight Commander game, maybe I'd allow it. Like, okay, it's a little crass, but I can be crass. Nobody's, you know, there's only 15 of us here. We're all adults. I'll allow it. But when a third of the audience is kids, I don't want to see a kid sit across from you and be like, "Hey, mister, what's a blowjob? That's awkward." And then I did say that was one of the few times I did say something to the TO of, "Can he just zip up his hoodie or something? Like, that's just a little," and he was asked not to do that. There was another time where somebody had a t-shirt and I did not intervene, and I do kick myself for not doing it. He was wearing a t-shirt that was an illustration of a woman falling down the stairs. And there was a foot at the top of it, and it said on the shirt, "Planned pregnancy" or "Planned parenthood."
Wow.
And that was one where I kind of had a delayed reaction, where I was like, oh, planned parent. Oh, fuck. And yeah, I didn't know what to do. And that was one of those murky ones where I was like, you know, I'm just here for game day. I really don't want to ruffle any feathers. But then I was like, you know what? I should have ruffled some feathers. That's not okay.
Yeah.
And that was one I wish I would have done something about. But you can go to the store owners and they should be doing something. And it is another avenue to explore.
Yeah, man, I can't believe that. Like, I can't believe we live in a world where people think that's acceptable or fun. Like, not only funny, but acceptable, right? Like they take it to the next level where like they think it's funny, and it's like, that's real problems. Like people, like there are a lot of women who have domestic violence issues, and like you're laughing about it.
Yeah.
Like really? And you know, then like the blowjob ones, like one of the big things that I feel about feminism is it's like I feel like women are appreciated for their sexuality and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm not saying sexuality is bad, but I want to be thought of as something besides that. And when you see the shirt of the blowjob, like he's saying like loud and clear to everyone in the room, the only reason I care about women is sex.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's just, it's hurtful. It's frustrating. And we live in a society where that's just acceptable.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
That reminds me of the t-shirt that he, I don't know if you're familiar with Cedric Phillips from Star City Games. There was a kerfuffle in December where he had posted a picture of a t-shirt that somebody had sent him. And it said, disregard females, acquire currency, and keep seven. And it was supposed to be a take, I guess there's this rap meme of like, fuck bitches, get money or something. And this was supposed to be like a spin on that. And there were people that were like, you know, that's an awesome shirt, I'll take one. And I'm just like, disregard females, really? And there were some of us that were really not okay with it. And it was amazing to me to see how many guys that just didn't see the big deal. And it was, you know, I can't be responsible for how you take it. And I was just like, you cannot wear that to an event. Like, that is not okay. And I just couldn't believe the pushback we got for that, where, you know, what are you thinking? Yeah. It's nothing. And I'm like, it is something. Like, that's part of the problem, you know? Like,
no, that is the problem. Well, I hate to say this. Like, normally I don't want to trash talk specific people, but having met Cedric multiple times, he does disregard females. I don't think he's ever looked me in the eye. And like, I've been with him many, many times.
And I think that's the other reason why it stung so bad, is because SCG has so few females on board, at least that I've seen. And I think if it were any other website, like if Frank Lepore had that shirt, you know, he's had Jackie writing for him. He's with Melissa right now. Melissa writes for him. You know, I know how he is. I would be a little more inclined to forgive something like that. But for, you know, for SCG having the reputation of being a boys club that they do, and then to have one of their big people rock that shirt, it was just too much. It was just like, you know, you're already not seen as a good place for women, and you want to rock this, and you're in a position of some sort of power, too much. I just can't do
it. Yeah. Well, and it's frustrating to me that some of the biggest names in Magic are some of the most sexist people in Magic, right? Like, And maybe I just know that because they're public facing enough, but it's like, it sucks that the people coming into the Magic scene are looking up to these men that just treat women like that, or like view women like that, right? Like, it's very frustrating to me to be like proud to be part of the, I'm proud to be part of the Magic community, but at the same time, like the heroes in the Magic community think that I shouldn't even be here.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even believe that I am a, like, should be allowed in the Magic community. Mm-hmm. And it's not everybody, like, definitely not. Like, I've had a lot of support from many pro players. But there's like these certain ones that just kind of ruin it for everyone else. And it really sucks. And there's no way for like me personally to even tackle that at all.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that would take a much bigger movement.
Yeah. The last thing I want to say on the shirt before we close the show is, I think the other thing that bothered me about that show is, if a woman were to wear something like that, like let's say it was disregard men, acquire currency, keep seven, you know, she would get so much shit for it. She'd be a man hater. She'd be a feminist. Or if it were the actual version, where if it was, you know, the rap version of, you know, fuck men, get money, she's a whore, she's here to pick up men. You know full well that a woman would not be allowed to wear that shirt at an event and get away with it. No way.
No, never. Yeah.
And that's really what kind of ruffled my feathers, was the double standard was very obvious to me.
Yeah. Well, and we live in a patriarchy. Like, men are on top, and there's no way you can, like, people will argue that all day, but the reality is, no, men are on top. Like, that's the reality. So to treat us like that, like, people are like, oh, you, like, you can vote, you have equal rights, like, you get paid the same, like, what are you complaining about? And it's like, it's the attitude. Mm-hmm. That's what we're complaining about. Like, you're still not viewing us as equals.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you had mentioned needing something bigger to sort of tackle that. I hope that one day LGS is big enough to tackle that.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, have you seen the diversity pledge?
I have.
I think that's a really good step in the right direction.
Yeah.
MTG Dad definitely came to me early on to work with him on that. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that he did, because I think it's a brilliant idea. And I'm kind of glad that it wasn't like me or like somebody who is already known for sort of tackling the diversity issues, that, like, I'm glad it was him that posted that up, because he's, you know, respected as a man and, you know, talks about Magic like outside of that perspective. So for him to come out and say that and have the diversity pledge idea, like, I think that makes it even go farther. Mm-hmm. But I really hope that the idea of that takes off and you know, if we have that big of a community dedication to it, the problem will not go away, because I don't think these problems are ever going to go away, but the problems will be more aware, and that'll make a huge difference. And, you know, it won't be as acceptable if, you know, all of the top people in the community write an article about diversity and talk about how you shouldn't behave this way. Then it's no longer going to be acceptable to wear shirts like that or make comments that are going to make people feel uncomfortable. Then they'll be the outsiders. Mm-hmm. And that's going to take years, but I think there's a lot of steps in the community that are making that happen.
Yeah, I'm actually reading over the pledge right now, and I would commit to this.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty, you know, it's something very small that, like, you can do quickly and that could make a huge difference.
So if anybody's listening and they want to participate, I can certainly throw a link to that up in the blog post, and you can also take the diversity pledge as well. And Tifa, if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Tifa Robles. And that's T-I-F-A-R-O-B-L-E-S. You can go to our YouTube channel, which is Video Time with Mike and Tifa. You can search that on YouTube. I have a blog, but I haven't been as active as I want to be on that. But if you're following me on Twitter, I'll post to that, and you can see the other ways to get a hold of me.
Mm-hmm. And LPS has a Facebook group?
Yes. Yeah. So there's an LPS page and a group. Mm-hmm. If you just want to, like, show your support by liking, go to the page. But if you want to be, like, involved or see what's going on, go to the group.
I have to say, I regret joining the group only because you invite me to so many awesome events that I can't actually go to.
Yeah, there is a way to turn that off, by the way.
Well, I do like seeing them because I like seeing out what you're doing, and it looks like fun from the outside. I just can't be a part of it.
Yeah. Well, that's because you need to move to Seattle.
You are only the 47th person to tell me that.
I have to count as two people, though, because Mike feels the same way.
Okay. So we'll give you 48 then. So. Well, Tifa, thank you so much for coming back on the show. And every time I talk to you, it's always such a pleasure. And I am truly blessed to be able to call you my friend.
Yeah, it was really wonderful to catch up a little bit with you.
Absolutely. And if anyone else has enjoyed the Deck Tees, you can find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. You can also find the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. The show is on Twitter at The Deck Tees. I am on Twitter at Original Estrus. And you can also email me directly at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. And please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.